To all the brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we will continue our sharing from this book, The Path, the Truth for Modern Day Bodhisattva, page 128. Coexist with our Mother Earth. This chapter is quite interesting and very short, but very useful. Everything in nature must coexist to develop harmony. Without harmony, there is no proper coexistence or coexistential sharing. So to maintain harmony, we need understanding, we need wisdom, we need the appropriate character, behavior for all this to manifest and to arise. So not only with Mother Earth, with humanity is the same. Able to coexist with all the races within our own country, with all the religious belief of the followers of the various great religion, it's not easy. And to really have good understanding, we must have the Dhamma. Instead of calling it the Dhamma, we can call it truth or virtue. Wisdom leading to virtuous living can bring about harmony and understanding for coexistence to arise. Without wisdom, without virtue, there is no harmony. Most living being or human being, they fail to develop the understanding to coexist together. They don't see the importance of that. Their ego drives them to actually divide humanity into many divisions. So through that word religion alone, they divide via belief systems. Then race, again they divide. Then between nation, nationality, again they divide. Wherever there is division, there is no harmony. There is always conflict, argument, misunderstanding. And if we are not careful, we are not tactful, it will lead to religious war, racial, they call it racial disharmony. Yeah, that will bring about conflict and at times war though. They call it civil war within the country. So all this explained clearly to us why we have to have harmony to coexist with each other. So not only with fellow humans, fellow living beings, with the environment, with nature, we also have to coexist with our planet, Mother Earth. If we destroy nature, nature will destroy us. That's the way the law of nature governs life and existence. So these nature's law, they are impersonal. They do not have feeling or emotion. If you violate them, the repercussion will be there. The resultant of your action will manifest. That's why when you cannot coexist, it will lead to disharmony. It will lead to disruption. Destruction that leads to war and all those things. So finally, it's suffering. misery. So this title is very useful. Coexist with the earth. So we see what the author has shared with us. We go back and we will continue with the sharing. According to the author, he said we used to have four distinct seasons on our planet. Not all country has that. Those that within the equatorial zone, they don't experience them. It's only those in the temperate and further away from the equator, you tend to experience the four seasons. Summer was always hot and winter was always cold. Wind and rain came at the right time, and farmers worked in their field and crops grew in accordance with the season. Nowadays, the climate has become erratic or unpredictable. While the use of technology and chemical to stimulate plant growth has disrupted the crop rotations. So this is how the author put it. But here, look at what is happening to the world. Sometimes the fourth season is also not the regular fourth season. This is the universal characteristics of change, because when conditions change, things change. And certain causes and conditions can bring about disruption to the normally like predicted season. Because this fourth season is actually based on our rotation of our Earth on its axis. With its magnetic field, the molten iron core in the center that created the magnetic field. The magnetic field is the one that holds our atmosphere to this Mother Earth planet. And because of that, it protects us from the extreme of this, what they call meteor, coming to destroy our planet. Because when they go through the atmosphere, they got burned down. And most of these meteors are too small to be harmful to us. That's why the planet survived for so long. Supposedly 10 over billion years, we still have our atmosphere. And this magnetic field is the one that creates the alignment of the magnetic forces that hold everything together. So as we rotate on our axis, we created the four seasons because we face the sun differently. Then as we rotate, day and night is formed. As we move through one rotation around the sun, we experience the four seasons because of the axis that the planet rotates. So certain time, the North Pole will be 24-hour sunlight. The South Pole will be 24-hour darkness. Then certain time of the year is the reverse, because we face the sun during the different part of the year at different times. So your rotation is the same. So if you understand geography, you can see that. Then those in between, you will have longer day and shorter night. Then those in the other side of the equator will have shorter day and longer night. So either longer day and shorter night, or shorter day, longer night, it depends on which part of Mother Earth you are on and which part we are in the quadrant. Then there is this weather and wind movement caused by a multiple of conditions. The axis is of course very dominant, but then the cloud formation, the activity on this planet, and also many other physical behavior that is going on. So all this has an impact on our planet. Then the totality of consciousness, to summation of all the consciousness of all the beings on this planet, not only human beings, the non-humans, the animals, the reptiles, everything. Then the effect of the moon, the gravity of the moon and the planet Earth, they also cause our what they call water mass to have movement. That's why you have high tide and low tide, and the scientists can actually predict them and measure the tide based on the signs that they have understood. I remember last time we studied under the almanac, then we can predict the tide, how high and how low that table got the whole world. You depend on your latitude and longitude and the time. Then they can read from the chart. That's why new moon and full moon, you can see low tide, high tide, because of the gravity pull. So these are nature's phenomena. They also have an impact on our planet, behavior of our water mass, the movement, everything. So when you understand all these causes and conditions, then you will know there are many factors that influence the behavior of our planet. So that title, to coexist with Earth, is very deep in its meaning. So to me, the four seasons is not always the same. It keep on changing, evolving. Then as you can see from history, the recorded history, calamity, everything. Even in China, the Yellow River, Huanghe, I saw a documentary. It has been creating a lot of disruption to human life, because the catchment area for these three gorgeous dams, especially the three major rivers, one of them is the Yellow River, the amount of water that come down is so massive, and it causes countless loss of life and crop almost every now and then. So much so, the Chinese government at that time, when they were still under communist rule, when they are still not economically so developed, they have tough time fighting this annual flood and disaster. Then later on, when they have the economic capability and even the scientific know-how, they started the ambitious project of building the three gorges dam to control flood, to develop dam management, water resource management. As civil engineer, we understand all this, and it's not really easy to conduct such a massive engineering. But somehow it took them many years, they succeeded. So that was a glorious era of China. Then for many years, they have not much problem. But recently, because of climatic weather condition changes, they also couldn't predict what actually will come. It seems this year there are still major flooding downstream of the three gorges dam. It's because the amount of rainfall that come down from the catchment was so high. Normally the variation of 10, 20, 30% is okay, they can cope. But it was reported 200-300% more. That amount of water, nobody can cope. No design can cope. So they overflow the spillway. The spillway is an overflow for them. All the extra water, they were discharged. So the downstream also couldn't take it. That's why they have to cope with a lot of downstream flooding and all those things. So this is what is happening too. Then you can also witness in other part of the world where they also have to build them to develop the appropriate measures to curb the nature's frequent disruption to crops and people. Destruction of life, crops, and other things. So their dam also, they have to manage it differently. Then some of the dam, they also fail, like the Wayan Dam in Europe. So when it fails, it causes a lot of downstream damages, destruction. So all this are part and parcel of nature's condition and way. So as human being, as per the author's sharing, he said they try to use technology and chemical to stimulate plant growth, and yet nowadays the climate has become unpredictable or erratic. While the use of technology and chemical to stimulate plant growth has disrupted the crop system rotation. So all this is happening. Then the author continues, he said, global warming has worsened. The earth seems to be running a high fever. The climate imbalance has caused flood and droughts across the globe. Everything on this earth must coexist with everything else. As we live on this land, we must rely on the balance of the four elements: earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element, in order to have balance. Actually, to have balance means to have harmony and be free from disaster. If any one of the four elements fall out of balance, disaster will be triggered and no one will be free from their impact. This is because we must respect this world and Mother Nature, means our planet. When Cixi was rebuilding schools after the 921 earthquake in Taiwan in 1999, I insisted on using interlocking bricks in Project Hope construction so that the land may breathe. Many years ago, while I was meditating, this one referring to the author, Chen Yuan Fa Shi, in the Jingshi Abbot one morning, I suddenly felt the earth breathing. I felt that it was alive. The surface of the land was like our skin, which breathes through its pores. This is why I say we must tread softly on the land, so as not to cause the earth pain. Heaven and earth sustain all beings, and all beings must rely on the land for survival. Although each has its own form and shape, all creatures live and must coexist with one another. Our relationship with everything else on earth and our relationship with one another are all closely intertwined and inseparable. In light of this, we must understand that all living beings coexist. Actually, all living beings must coexist with Mother Earth. In order to maintain peace and harmony in the world, we should open up our heart and bring forth our love for humankind, for all living beings. If we understand that all living beings must coexist, we will have endless love for one another and for all life forms. Only then will the world be peaceful and harmonious. So this last part is accurate. For there to be peace and harmony, they have to develop love and compassion, understanding to coexist as one entity, because we share this Mother Earth. Nobody can own Mother Earth. Mother Earth exists because nature exists. And Mother Earth is part of nature. We are part of nature. Man and nature must harmonize. If man and nature does not harmonize or coexist, it will lead to disruption. The effect of disharmony is also part of karmic. The karmic repercussion. So the way Mother Earth reacts is like, if we can give an analogy, Mother Earth is like a human being, a very massive summation of all the consciousness, and he behaves like a being, a very massive being. So like human being, when we live life, we go through life, if we are not careful, we harm ourselves or hurt ourselves. Sometimes other people may hurt us too. Then what happens is, if we don't take care, without the knowledge of science, medical science and technology, we can develop problems. That's why sometimes people through injury, through wound, can develop gangrene. Then that part can become like the tissue, become septic. Then we can develop what they call severe medical condition. So when this happens, for human being, normally what we do is, if it's too bad already, if you can't treat it with medication and all, say they cut it out, they did an operation to remove it. So sometimes your physical body also same. If there are certain growth, cancer cell, all this come about is because of karma. Karma in the sense that when the former mind, the so-called human being, create a lot of negative thought process. And this negative thought process have the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. So the negative thought will create stress in them, create fear, worry, anxiety in them. And all this energy are very negative in nature. Then they will cause the immune system to break down. Then they will develop disease, sickness and all those things. Then they go for medical checkup. Then through the CT scan or whatever scan, they realize something has gone wrong inside. There are growth, sometimes in the brain, sometimes in the various organs, sometimes even in the colon. Then sometimes in the lungs, sometimes in the breath too. So what they recommend usually is, initially is medication, then therapy, chemotherapy or whatever. But if all this doesn't work, they may even go for operation first. So they try to operate and see whether the thing still continue to develop or not, means whether it's malignant or not. Otherwise, if it has not spread through the operation, they may clear it. So likewise, Mother Earth is the same. Either human consciousness, especially human, the Earth consciousness, or the other living beings, non-human consciousness, if there is this negativity of mind state, if majority of them has this negativity of mind state, so they will create like cancer and all those things in concentrated locality. It can be in certain city or certain country. Then when this develop, what happened? Mother Earth planet don't have surgeon to operate on them. So they invoke the nature's law. That's why it arise calamity, earthquake, or tsunami, the tectonic plate shift. Then it caused this movement that it will kill and wipe off all those with negativity of consciousness to heal. Then sometimes the what they call volcanic eruption or earthquake is so severe, the whole island got torn off. Then they create a massive disruption. Of course, it brings along all those that are supposed to die chemically. So this is nature's way of healing. So when less and less of this negativity of consciousness, Mother Nature will heal. That's why MCO is a good example. Our COVID-19 pandemic, during the initial MCO, do you realize pollution all become like taken care of? The river clean up them by themselves. There are less pollution, less negativity of human behavior. But that happened at a great economic cost. The economic cost is there is no economic activity, hardly any. So this shutdown or slowdown can cause a lot of disruption to society, to humanity, to fellow human beings or living beings. A lot of people will be out of job. Their economic activity get curbed. All the airline industry, the hotel industry, the tourism industry, they will be all affected. And a lot of people will be out of job. Then the medical team will be overloaded and overstressed. And you will have a lot of people panicking, having negativity of mind state. So all this will develop. But then the good point is there is a purification process before all these things happen. So human being has to balance all this. That's why you have to find a way out of this pandemic. So everybody is hoping for the vaccine. But there are certain governments that try to mitigate it. Not easy. They find their own way. Some, they have less intensive lockdown. But provided you do it with understanding and proper measures, this COVID-19 pandemic is not easy to curb. A lot of nations that initially did well finally had to impose lockdown again. You look at Korea, you look at Japan, you look at Vietnam, now they are doing it again. Then of course all the other countries that were too lax in their control of the pandemic lockdown, they were experiencing high numbers of new cases and death, and the figure keep on surging. So it's not easy. It is something very delicate that people need to create the appropriate balance. So hopefully with the measures taken and the progress along the vaccine, things can become better. Unless the vaccine come out, life will not go back to normalcy. The airlines are suffering. The tourism industry are suffering. So without tourists, the economy of all the nation, they suffer. Consumption drop. So shrinking economy. So a lot of country is experiencing the first quarter of they call negative growth. Their growth shrink. Most of them double digit. And this is just second quarter. Third quarter, if we hit again, which most people believe will be negative, but less severe than this second quarter. Nevertheless, two quarters of negative growth will lead to recession. That's why the stimulus package, a lot of money has been pumped into the system and hopefully to prop up the unemployment rate, to ease out the suffering, the difficulty that fellow citizens have to endure and go through. So various governments are doing their part to actually mitigate all this. So we have to really play our role, have the understanding, read it, pure thought, invoke power, merits for causes and conditions, for our consciousness to improve, to turn around, for the world economy to come through, then for this pandemic to subside, so that we can all go back to the normal pace of life, so that our planet's economic activity and coexistence of the human race with others can continue to happen. Then hopefully this pandemic can bring forth a better understanding for all the head of governments and the human population to develop the appropriate understanding so that they have better love, care and concern for each other, for the world, for the planet, not to be negative, not to cause so much disruption to the totality of consciousness again. So this is where we have to really seriously and sincerely learn from nature's experience. Nature has its own marvelous way of showing humanity that when things go wrong, it means you have lived your life negatively. And so much so that this pandemic thing will surface. Or the effect of what you have did, you reap what you sow, it will show it to you. So with all this understanding, hopefully it can help us to learn new things, develop better understanding and change for the better. Okay, we go on to the next topic. We have finished this chapter. The next chapter is even more beautiful. Cherishing everything. I like this title. Cherishing everything and appreciate our blessing. If you can do this, you will be a blessing to all. You will have a lot of merits and virtue. Your karma will be beautiful. To do this, you must have wisdom and understanding. Can you cherish everything? No matter what happens, cherish Mother Earth, cherish our planet, cherish our loved one, cherish all fellow humanity, even the animals, the reptiles, the living plants, other living creatures or living beings. If we can have that love and compassion to cherish everything, then we will have gratitude. We will have love. We will have compassion. Then we can appreciate our blessing, whatever that we can still have to exist as a human being on this planet, to have the good life, to have the good blessing, to receive all this, what they call the golden era, where we can experience so many beautiful things. Our senses are all, most of us, intact. That is a great blessing. We are not defective in any one of our senses. Like those who are having problem with their senses by birth, or they call it the group of people that has handicapped people, or in our language, okay, you orang kurang upaya means handicapped people. They are handicapped in many aspects of their senses. They couldn't perform certain function of their senses. Some may be deaf, some may be dumb, some may be blind, some may have what they call handicap in the sense that their limbs are having problem. Some are born without limbs. So there are many examples. There are some are born autistic, artistic, with problem. Then you have a lot of those deformed, the defective human structure, skin disease and all those things. You can witness a lot of this. So when we have proper health, our senses are all intact, we should actually appreciate our good blessing. We should cherish whatever that is still functioning and working for us as a human being, or our organ. If your blood test come back so beautiful, you should have what they call appreciative mind state. You must appreciate your good karma, your good blessing. That's why I used to tell people sometimes in my Dhamma sharing, I think at SJVA. At that time, I said, for my age 60 plus, when I did my blood test, everything is still past everything. And all the senses and organs are still in order and still have the good health. So that is real blessing. That's why my nature rejoices. And I appreciate every moment of life that this former mind is able to give me, so that I can make full use of it to live life, to experience life, and to be a blessing to all. So this moment mind is very useful. Use it to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. That is what life is all about. You have the condition, you have the wisdom and the understanding, you can live that phase of life, the third phase of Dhamma, Pativita. So when you can cherish everything and appreciate everything, you have great blessing. So the way to live life is very simple. Have contentment. Then be appreciative of life, our loved one, our friends, our neighbor. We appreciate what they have done for us. Our parents, they give us life. They care for us. They support us. They educate us. Then they even sacrifice for us. So we must have gratitude towards them. We must love them. But they are the one that bring us to this world, give us life, care for us, support, provide, educate, guide, and sacrifice so much for us. That's why they are called our parents. When we are young, small, they are the one that really bring us up. Out of love, they care, they provide, they support, they sacrifice, they never complain. So in return, We must have our fellow piety. We must also love them, care for them, then understand their sacrifice. Then we must cherish everything that they have given us. Their hope. Their hope is very simple. Their need is also very simple. When they can see you grow up, become somebody responsible, successful, and have a good life, that is their joyous reward moment. They are not so selfish. They are actually very simple people. When their children are successful, happy, they will be successful. They will be very happy too, as parents. So when you have this contentment in you, this understanding in you, and you can cherish everything that your parent has done for you, your teacher has done for you, your neighbor, your good friend, your relative, your colleague, or even your own relationship with others. Cherish everything. And appreciate your good blessing. So contentment, love, compassion, appreciative value, and have this ability to cherish everything that arises, that you come to encounter, they are great virtue, very beautiful virtue. Then have generosity, have kindness, have goodness. When you take care of life, life take care of you. When you take care of karma, you take care of life. And when you take care of life, life take care of you. You will become beautiful. So everything in this world is about having good values, having good mind states. If we can have virtue, we will be very, very beautiful. And the wise people are virtuous people. They come together. Without wisdom, there is no real virtue. You need wisdom to have real virtue. Wise people are virtuous people, automatic. They have love, they have compassion. They are very simple people, contented. Their mind states are beautiful. They are always heedful, fully aware within. Their mind states are tranquil and still. Then they have a lot of contentment, respect for others. They have humility. They know how to cherish everything. They will have love and compassion for all things. They have good mind states, no negativity. So this is how a cultivator's mind should be. With wisdom, all this can arise. Without wisdom, not easy to achieve what this title has said. Cherish everything, appreciate our blessing. Okay, now we read through and see what the author has to say about this topic. According to the author, in recent years, disaster has become more frequent, and the root cause is man-made. We rely on the earth for everything, and so will future generations. Therefore, we should conserve our resources. So this is the author's way of seeing things, and he approaches it from that way. So what she said on we rely on our earth for everything is very true. And so our future generation. But my teacher has a better way of saying it. Chayantra, he always say, nature has great loving kindness. Mother Earth has great loving kindness. Nature just give and give. Nature never take. Then he gave example, is it? The air we breathe come from nature. We take for granted. The water that we have for our drinking, our sustenance, for whatever activity that you use it for, washing, cleaning, planting, everything come from nature. Then all of the things that civil engineer use, we have a definition for our career. The civil engineer or engineer are the people, professional people, who know how to tap the resources of nature to develop the appropriate thing for the comfort of mankind and humanity. So everything that you come to experience and use, they come from nature. Your houses, your building, your infrastructure, your highway, your hospital, your airport, even all the high-rise building, all the mechanical installation, everything, they come from nature. Even your power supply, energy, come from nature. Either it's fossil energy or nowadays green technology, solar, then hydro, and many other form. So if you look at nature, all these are the resources of nature that we can make use of to our understanding. At the moment, our scientific technical understanding has progressed quite a lot, but we are still not at the level where we can mitigate many of the disruption that technology and engineering has bring about. Development has its pro and con. That's why when you start to develop something or construct something, you need to understand the environmental impact that it has on the environment when you decide to go ahead with that type of project. Especially major project, major property development, major earthwork, or major dam construction. The economic impact is one aspect. The environmental impact is another aspect. That's why we have this, what we call environmental impact study. Then we have environmental mitigation that we need to do to mitigate all the possible impact. And this even covers life form and many things. So all this, the technical people, the engineering field, the scientists, they have developed some form of understanding, but it is still not really comprehensive enough to cope with all the needs to mitigate. There are many areas where we can't mitigate because we don't understand. Then when the effect comes, then only we understand. So all this we need to experience and go through. Then there is also a lot of what they call urbanization disruption. As we urbanize, we actually remove more of this landform that has vegetation. So as you urbanize, there are more and more concrete drains. There are more and more what they call roads and highway, and even cemented concrete floor, courts and other things. So during normal rain, instead of having most of the rainfall or runoff captured by the catchment area, means a certain percentage will go into the ground, because that time it was still covered with vegetation and all things with all the deep root. Then the surface runoff is not that much, minimal, maybe 30%, 40%. Unless it rains continuously. But nowadays, because of the urbanization, the concrete surface and the monsoon rain, Most of the rain that fall, they straight away went into our drainage system and very fast. Last time, the runoff timer take a few hours, you know, for that flood, for that heavy rainstorm to actually reach the river, then reach the downstream. That's why it has time for the discharge. That is not so much disruption, but because of urbanization, almost very fast, all this water reached the river. Then from the river, because of the quantity of water that came down, instead of 30-40%, now it's 90% over. Is all channeled to the concrete drain and reached the river. Then when it reached the river, it will move down and cause a lot of flooding and disruption. That's why urban flash flood is not easy to cope. These are urban problem, new problem that surface. Then in the early day, I worked for drainage and irrigation department before I was with Mother Muda. So we understand drainage. So like Kedah is a plain, average 6 inch below sea level. So this type of terrain is very prone to flood. But we have our mitigation. We have the barrage. The barrage to actually mitigate them. So during high tide, when the sea level is high, we shut down the barrage. Then when the low tide come back, we open up the barrage and drain the water. But it's not always the case. Because sometimes heavy rain, all this water that come from the catchment need to be drained. And the sea level is very high, you cannot open up the barrage. So you have to, by decision of not your choice, allow the water to back up until the sea level drop. Then only you can release them. So there are instances of flood too that can happen. As I remember when I was young, certain time of the year or sometimes once in 2 years or 3 years, we experience this backflow, the backflow, and it's very interesting. Suddenly, the water level just rise. But my hometown there, Simbangkola, not so bad. Maximum was 2 feet high, so it was like a mini swimming pool. We had our experience. We swim, we play, we have fun, but we didn't know the danger until later on. When I graduated as a civil engineer, then I understand all this. Okay, we will continue your sharing. We will read what the author writes. We should understand that the resources we use in our daily life do not come to us easily. At each meal, for example, we should think of all the hard work that went into producing a bowl of rice. This one my daughter can understand. We actually contemplated a lot of all this, the causes and conditions for whatever that comes to her. Farmers carefully germinating seed of grain, planting the seedling, removing weeds and irrigating the field. During harvest season, they work under the scorching sun to cut the stalk, dry the grain and remove the chaff to finally produce the rice that we eat. Although you can say that nowadays there are mechanization, no need to manually harvest, but it's still not easy, the whole process. Then you got to send this paddy to the rice miller to mill them into rice. Then they get to pack and sell them to the consumer. And the consumer buy them, then go to wash and clean and cook them. Then only that bowl of rice appear in front of you. So the causes and conditions that lead to all this, you have this sensitivity of mind, you will appreciate, you will cherish everything that comes to you. That's why you become different. you don't take things for granted. A lot of human beings' problems come from taking things for granted, especially relatives, spouse, family members, good friends. Yeah, you take things for granted. You think your wife or your parent, your mother, they must toy for you, work for you, look for all the money to provide you with the education and all those things. So when you don't appreciate and cherish what they have contributed and done, there is no harmony, no love, and they don't feel the reward. That's why there is no joy in their life. But when you start to appreciate what they have done and how they have contributed towards the family unit, towards your well-being, your future, when you really appreciate what they have done and cherish everything that they have given you, provided for you, you really make them feel good and happy. They don't mind struggling and doing it. But they feel that it's worth it. At least my children appreciate what I have done for them. Appreciate my hard work, my sacrifice, my love. So all this, for human harmony, human relationship, is very useful. You can give love by having this ability to appreciate what they have done for you and to cherish what they have done to support you and provide for you. So through all this, you can bring forth joy and happiness to them, to many people. Even the simple words of thank you so much, mom, or thank you so much, dad, or thank you so much towards your spouse, towards your children. You have done well. You have made us proud. We really rejoice. Like all the Kayamita who did well, my nature rejoiced. That is the highest reward. You don't have to reward me in kind. You only need to work sincerely, cultivate diligently, then persevere to awaken, to develop the understanding. Then my nature will rejoice. In fact, that is the highest gift that you can give to any teacher or to anybody who has guided you, who has shared the understanding with you, the training. So strive on with heedfulness, be appreciative of your own blessing, and cherish everything that the world has given you, people has given you and provided you, the golden era, the condition that you are able to be born into. This is a transition period where everything is there. That day I received something, I forgot what is it. It was something very well written. I try to recall, see whether I can recall. That there was one saying which was really very beautiful, but I don't think I can recall. Never mind, when I recall, I share with you. But there is one guy who talked about those who are born during the 50s. That is my category. I was born in 1954. He said, those who are born in the 50s, they are really blessed, he said. They went through so much transition. In the 50s, we are still so backward, but we escaped the war, is it? We escaped the Spanish flu. But of course, he said later on, the year 2020, we have to confront pandemic COVID-19, although we escaped the Spanish flu. Then he said we also escaped the World War II. So then we get to experience the life of the 50s and the 60s, which were still very primitive in the sense that science and technology were still at its infancy. But we have good education system from the British. So we actually gain a life to experience independence for our country, Malaysia. Then we saw and witnessed how Malaysia was formed, the racial harmony, our primary school education, the games we play were so different from the kids that are born in the 70s and the 80s, the millennium kid. We had our joy, like the song, Seasons in the Sun. Seasons in the Sun. We have fun, we have joy, we have seasons in the sun. So all those nice songs, evergreen songs. Then later on, the 60s was our education year. Then 70, we saw development, first Malaysia plan, second Malaysia plan, and all that. Then end of the 70s, 79, I graduated as a civil engineer. Then the 80s, I saw the advent of science, scientific discovery, many things comes about. Computer, everything start to happen. So we have the agricultural boom. Then we have the technological boom. Then initially, of course, was the industrial revolution before the technological boom. So agricultural revolution, we witness it. Then industrial revolution, we witness it. Well, my time was in the field of engineering. I saw a lot of industrialization. So the people were talking about industrialization, shifting from agriculture to industrialization. Then after that is the IT revolution. The tech revolution. Well, that one really transformed the world like anything. That's why after the 80s, you see the 90s, the year 2000 onward, fantastic. Those were the millennium kids. That's why all our transition, we get to witness. Our parents actually miss a lot of things. Yeah, my parents passed away. My mom passed away 2013. Oh, sorry, 2012, I think. Yeah. And my father passed away 2004. Actually, if they had lived on, they could have witnessed a lot of fantastic things. Yeah. Then we are at the peak and the prime of our career when all these things were happening. Then now we are at the right retirement age, the 60s. I mean, 60 over years old, not the year 60, the year 2020 something. We have the means and the ability to live that type of life, to experience life to the fullest, to do what we want in life, So these are beautiful era. I also call it the golden era. And we went through so many transitions. Almost every 10 years, something happened. And our life is so rich, so wonderful, so beautiful, so meaningful. That's why I cherish every moment of my life, every aspect of my life. Then I appreciate my nature's blessing. That's why this teaching is so beautiful. My nature willing to share with the world, with humanity. So if you reflect and look back, you will have a lot of joy. And you will realize you are really, really blessed. You should develop appreciation of every moment of life, everything that happened to your life, and cherish everything that you have been given. Instead of becoming so negative in your mind state, so miserable, so unhappy, complaining here and there, every day, worry here, worry there. Planning this, planning that, running around like crazy, stress out for nothing. Rain also complain, no rain also complain. That is not life. That is heedless living. Why are you this way? But I believe Kayamita are no longer this way. They have become so different. You agree or not? I believe everyone agree. Because as Kayamita, we understand life so beautifully, so differently. So this is really a magical era, a golden era. That's why this sasana is really beautiful. you have the causes and condition to be born as a human being, to encounter the true Dhamma, the Buddha's asana, and to have the good life through this good understanding. You are really, really blessed. And you can be a blessing to all too. You are most beautiful. So with this, I think, another 5 minutes, okay, 4:10. I will read on a bit more. Today, although farmers use machinery, which significantly reduce labor, the production of this machine also require industrial execution and lots of manpower, from the mining of raw material to designing, manufacturing, shipping, and selling of the machine. Likewise, cooking appliances and utensils and electricity or gases are needed to cook the rice. Only after all these factors come together do we have food on the table. So each time we eat, we should be thankful and grateful to the people who have worked diligently to help put the food on our table. Therefore, we should cherish every single meal. Then, because I went through the 50s and the 60s, my mother at that time during the era was not so fortunate. There was no gas, no electric heater in that sense, or they call the one that you use to cook one, hot plate. So at that time, you need to go and look for your own firewood. You have to go and buy the firewood, chop them into small pieces, dry them up, so that they are fit for making fire in the kitchen. And the firewood that we make, they are not really so reliable. Sometimes rain, wet, so it's very difficult to actually light up the kitchen. So my mother replaced with sawdust. He go and put sawdust, he put kerosene. Then I realized that was a good way of making fire to cook our food, our 3 meals. Actually, not easy. My mother sacrificed a lot, labored everything. Every morning he woke up 5 a.m., sometimes 4 something, to wash clothes, prepare everything, our 3 meals, our uniform, our bag, everything. And big family. He has to go to the market to buy things. So I help her with the firewood and all those things. So whatever I can help, I help. But she worked really hard. But she have love. She worked with love. Because to her, life in Malaysia is like already out of suffering world while he was in China. At that time, China was, you work hard, also not enough food on the table. But when she come over here, there was abundance of resources and food, and things grow so easily, she said. That's why that joy, that contentment gave her the strength. And she worked with joy and took care of us and raised us up. One mother can raise 9 to 10 children, take care of one grandmother and one husband. Not easy fit. Nowadays, 1, 2 kids also not easy to raise. So, if we have this understanding, we will really cherish what we have, appreciate life, and thank our parents for giving us all those sacrifice and wonderful moments. Really, really appreciate it. Okay, I read on a bit more. Similarly, all products come from the land and joint effort of many people. Therefore, we should appreciate all of our material resources and love and cherish our planet. I was once visited by an American professor who hoped to find a correlationship among environmental protection, morality and the earth, so that he could better promote recycling work. When he heard me say love and cherish the earth, he was curious and asked me to elaborate on that. I explained that love and cherish means that we should regard this planet as a living being. Everyone must take care of the earth as we take care of our own body. I used an example to illustrate my point. I told him that I use each page of my notebook at least 3 times as I jot down notes and reminder. The first time, I write with a pencil. The second time with a ball pen, and finally with a brush. Environmental protection must first start with each and every one of us loving and cherishing the material around us. Nowadays, we pay great attention to enjoying convenience and pleasure of life. In order to reduce manual work, we continue to create new products and make them more accessible and easier to use. Through this process, we have unknowingly damaged the planet. For example, most trash now is made out of plastic and styrofoam, which are non-biodegradable. Additionally, new models of home appliances, television and computers are always coming out. If we do not embrace the concept of cherishing what we have, we will develop the bad habit of constantly replacing old models with new models, even when the old ones are still usable. It is said that thrift is virtue. We should cultivate tranquility and be frugal to nurture our virtue. We must live a simple life and avoid extravagance in order to cope with desire and attain our goal. Otherwise, the huge amount of garbage that accumulate from extravagant lifestyle will ultimately endanger our environment. If each of us cherish what we have, in part by recycling paper, glass and can, we can then reproduce new product with this material without exhausting our nature's natural resources. Mr. Yi from Ninghu in Taipei, Taiwan, saw that people were throwing away old batteries, which was wasteful, and would leach chemical into the land. So he began to collect, test, and sort them. If the battery was still usable, he used them. He made them available at the recycling station. Mr. Yi not only cherished material goods, he was also very patient to understand such a tedious job. Mr. Xu is another example. He thought it wasteful for recycling station to dispose of electrical plug. So he invented a device that would take apart the plug and separate the component into plastic, bronze, and copper. Bronze and copper can easily be reused. Even though each plug contains very little bronze and copper, they can be collected and combined to form a significant amount. When Tsuji volunteers leave their home, they carry their own reusable dish and utensil. Nowadays, more people are eating out. If each person in Taiwan uses a new pair of disposable chopsticks for each meal, then several million pairs of disposable chopsticks will be used per meal. How many trees need to be cut now to make so many chopsticks? It is thriftier for each person to bring along personal chopsticks when eating out. We must love and cherish our planet and encourage one another to appreciate what we have so we can create blessing for ourselves. So this part is very good, eh? Very true. Each individual can help save a bit, by working on recycling or stop the usage of disposable chopstick or even plasticware and all those things. You bring your own container and recycle them. Even the plastic container, bring along and recycle them. And if you want to dispose of later, you can go for this Tsuji recycling program. They have a lot of places that help to collect all this. And they did a great job in recycling. And through this recycling, they can also actually receive quite a bit of money, especially the newsprint, newspaper, and all those things, cardboard. Then sometimes the factory that need all this raw material, they can sell to them. Okay, at least we cover two chapters, so we can stop now and have our 45 minutes of meditation. So let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now you can have 45 minutes of meditation. Silent awareness based meditation. Good. We were off the light. Always remember, relax and maintain awareness. Don't do anything. Then allow the silent mind to surface. Whatever sankhara, let it slow down until it ceases. You don't do anything, everything will return to its original state of stillness before the stirring. That is your true mind. That's how you meditate. Don't do anything. Relax, maintain awareness for as long as you can, 24 hours. Then later on, trust your nature. Just let it do whatever it wants. Then use that mind state that is in the state of awareness, tranquility and stillness, to meditate, to understand, think, to observe. Okay, I will set the alarm. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Then slowly, mindfully, maintain the awareness within for as long as you can. These are the inner mind states that you have trained. The mind states of tranquility, stillness, and self-awareness within. You can continue this mind state in the midst of life and develop the stability of it until you are mindful in the midst of life. Then your daily mindfulness will come in. The stability of daily mindfulness is very important. Not until your mind is ever mindful throughout the conscious moment when you are in life, you are not able to be heedful. To be able to be heedful in a state of heedfulness, you have to really relax and maintain awareness for as long as you can until the awareness stabilizes. Then the mind enters sati. Then everything you do is in sati. That's how your daily mindfulness can stabilize. It's only when the mind is in sati can you be mindful, fully aware throughout life, in the midst of life. So these are the training that you need to go through. The formal meditation is to stabilize the awareness until the mind enters sati. Then use it to meditate, to experience whatever you have the condition to experience, to observe, to understand. Then the real one is when your daily mindfulness has stabilized. Daily mindfulness is the real meditation. When you are mindful and heedful in the midst of life, you can understand many things. You can see many things. You can awaken to many things. The realization will come by itself through that silent mind, through that awareness nature. Okay, so we will move on to the next session, which is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you might have with regards to today's discussion topic or your meditation. or the Dhamma, whatever that you want to understand, you can ask. Okay, we'll open it up. You only need to show your hand sign, yeah? Either wave or bagus sign, then we will connect you. Or just on the mic and just come in. Okay. If nobody, then maybe I will share with you this something to do with the cultivation. There was a case during the Buddha's time. So there was a question. Maybe I read to you from the beginning. Actually, it started with the fire sermon. So it's mentioned, seeing thus, the wise one become dispassionate towards the senses, is the eye, visible object, eye consciousness, eye contact and feeling, etc. Through dispassion, greed fades away. With the fading away of greed, his mind is liberated. When his mind is liberated, there comes the wisdom that it is liberated. So this one is regarding the fire sermon. Then the Buddha continued. A fire keeps burning so long as there is fuel. This part is very easy to understand. As long as you feed it with heedless thinking, there is the fuel for it to continue to think. So it will continue to burn. That's why in the fire sermon, the Buddha said, the eye is burning. Eye contact is burning. Eye consciousness is burning. And the feeling that arises upon contact is burning. So a fire keeps burning so long as there is fuel. Fuel means you are heedless, you are deluded, you don't have wisdom. You continue to think or analyze, reason and react. So the more fuel we add, the more it burns. It's the same with the fire of life. We keep on feeding our senses to satisfy our craving. It is true that our senses need food, that they should not starve, but it is vital to give them proper food and to lessen the craving of each sense faculties. Unless this is done, there will be no ability to restrain the senses. There will be no harmony. There will be conflict, lack of peace in the mind. If we want mental progress, we must make the necessary effort to guard our thoughts from evil thoughts or a wrong thought. For evil thoughts and wrong thoughts are ever ready to creep in and overwhelm the lazy man, means the heedless one. The man who lives brooding over pleasure, unrestrained in their senses, immoderate in food, lazy and inert, him verily Mara overthrow as wind overthrow a weak tree. So this one is Dhammapada verse 7. You go to Dhammapada verse 7, you will find this. Then after that is a the ability they use the word control, which is not good. The control of thought and senses is not easy. It should be restrained. The ability to restrain our senses is not easy. It is hard to deprive the mind of unwholesome thought, to check evil inclination and curb impulses. But we must do this difficult task if we wish to ease the tension and mental itch that is ever ready to sap the mind until man and mind are destroyed. So this part is for cultivator to understand. You need to endure, you need to restrain and develop the understanding. Then he said, but how does a person restrain his senses? Is it by shutting down his ears, eyes, by not sensing the sense object? The Buddha said, certainly not. The Buddha once talked with a certain Brahmin youth, Uttara. Yeah, this guy is Uttara, a pupil of Parasariya. Uttara, does Parasariya, the Brahmin, teach control of the senses to his disciple? Uttara answered, good Gautama, the Brahmin Parasariya does teach control of the senses to his disciple. But in what way does Parasariya, the Brahmin, teaches control of the senses to his disciple? And to this, good Gautama, one should not see material form with the eye, nor hear sound with the ear. It is thus, good Gautama, that Brahmin Parasariya teaches control of senses to his disciple. In that case, Uttara, the blind man and the deaf, must have control of their senses. So the Buddha put it in a very simple way, because they don't see and they don't hear. For a blind man, Uttara, who does not see material form with his eye, nor the deaf man hear the sound with his eye, are they enlightened? They are not enlightened, is it? So the Brahmin you was silent. And knowing this, the master said to Venerable Ananda, he said, in one way, Ananda, does the Brahmin Parasariya teach control of the senses? But in the noble Aryan disciple of the Buddha, however, Ananda, the incomparable restraint of the senses is taught differently. You must listen to this. This is the exact Buddha's instruction. And what, Ananda, is the incomparable restraint of senses taught by the Buddha? Herein, Ananda, to a monk seeing form with eye, there arise like and dislike, and both like and dislike. He thus aware that a reason in me is this like and dislike, and both like and dislike. That too is condition, means dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. They are cross and causally dependent. That is meditation. See it. That this is dependent originating. This is not a being inside there reacting. So all this are the understanding that you have to develop. Then he said, but whatever equanimity there is, the Aryan disciple realized that is peaceful and sublime, not the like and dislike. So the like and dislike, and both like and dislike that arose in him can be extinguished, means can be rooted out, and equanimity remains, means peace remains, means you don't have to react. You can develop the wisdom to accept the reality of the moment. Then there is no more like and dislike. Thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things will be like that. So this understanding is most important. As if a man who has opened his eye should close, or having closed should open them. Even so, with the same speed, listen to this, and ease, does the like and dislike, and both like and dislike, vanish? so that equanimity remains, means you must have the wisdom, understand. Without the wisdom, you cannot. Means at the moment of sense experience, it will automatically happen because you have the unisop manasikara, initial wisdom. That's why without the initial wisdom, you cannot at that moment practice letting go or practice not to cling to like and dislike. There is no such practice. You have to observe through the silent mind and realize whenever you arise a like and dislike, pleasant and pleasant sensation, it brings about suffering. It is gross. It is tormenting. Yeah, there is a craving. And all these are dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon, have the characteristics of impermanent. So if you attach, you cling, you crave, you will suffer. So see clearly that these are dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon, not a reality. So impermanent is a universal characteristic. So if you cling on to one side, the other side will appear. But because it's impermanent, sooner or later it becomes dislike. So like and dislike continue to oscillate, and there is lack of peace. And this type of life is very gross, coarse. Whereas the sublime, peaceful state of equanimity, born of understanding, the third level of seeing, where you can see things as they are, to accept the reality of the moment and be at peace with all people and all conditions, that is the real wisdom. So that is the state of mind that can come to be at peace with all situations, or condition. So whatever that can bring about this understanding is the wisdom that you need for you to liberate your mind or awaken. So this part of the sharing on the senses is very important. So sense experience need the silent mind, the meditative mind, the stability of daily mindfulness, to observe, to understand how you are conditioned into like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sensation, how it conditions you into emotion, fear, worry, anxiety, craving, lust, or envy, jealousy. All this is the resultant of your mind state that trigger off that duality, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. And this is what the stirring of the mind is all about. Your reaction to sense experience is all about. That this is based on your craving, your delusion, your self-delusion, sakkayaditti. That's why you react to sense experience. That's how you stir your mind, the lack of peace. Then you cling to the duality, you attach. So the training is to be mindful of this, so that you understand how the form and mind fall and become afflicted, miserable, how you become selfish, how you become violent, how you develop the negativity of mind states of envy, jealousy, hatred, insecurity, fear, worry, anxiety. So all these are conditioned arising mind state, born of your wrong view, sakkaya ditti, self-delusion. See it clearly, understand it, then tell yourself, this one does not lead to peace, this one does not lead to equanimity, the sublime state of peace within. Then why do you arise it? Why can't you see all this clearly and wake up so that you are no longer deluded, deceived by the phenomenal world of consciousness? Then with this understanding, you start to straighten your view. Then you ask yourself, How can I be at peace the next time I see, I hear, I smell, I taste, I tactile feel and think? This is what the teaching is all about. The 18th sense line. The fire sermon also related to the 18th sense line, and they are very powerful. And if you can awaken to the 18th sense line, you will become enlightened. Yeah. But all this need mindfulness, to be sensitive, to be aware, to understand the movement. If you are not mindful, you are not sensitive, you cannot understand. So all this movement cannot arise because you are deluded. And when you are deluded, you tend to entangle yourself and you lack sensitivity. You suffer without realizing that there is suffering. That's why you don't even know that there is suffering. And you get yourself entangled more and more. And you keep on getting angry, more angry, blaming people. Sometimes blame others and blame yourself. Arising the remorse and all those things. Then you project your thought into the future. You worry unnecessarily. You cannot see things as they are, the reality of the moment. You cannot experience that sublime state of peace without reaction, without the stirring of mind, without the reaction to sense experience. Thing is just the way it is, like the Buddha say, condition like that, things will be like that. Contemplate, reflect until very clear. Then go through life, experience life, then put it to test. Is it the truth? Thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things will be like that. Suchness, ta-ta-ta. The reality is. What is the reality. The reality is what is. It cannot be otherwise. Your condition is already set. It has to be this way. So don't argue with the reality. Don't argue with the present moment reality or what is. Whatever happened, don't perceive it with negativity. You have to accept it with wisdom, according to what the Buddha has taught us. Whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions has been fixed. Nature's law. You can't change. It cannot be otherwise. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, you will suffer. Because when you cannot get what you want, you will be afflicted. That is the first noble truth reality. So all this understanding will unfold. Then you will understand. So cultivation is about heedfulness. And to be heedful, you need to be mindful, stabilize it, to be ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, including the Four Right Efforts. Then the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. So all these are related cultivation. Then when you are mindful, aware, you are sensitive, then you can understand the teaching very quickly. Because when you are sensitive, you can feel what suffering is, the subtle greed, the subtle evil root that caused you to be in a state of lack of peace. Then the subtle suffering that you experience, you know this is not the sublime state. This is not the peaceful state. So all these are agitation, subtle form of suffering, misery. And because you are so sensitive, even the subtle, slight uncomfortableness or dislike, you can feel them. That's why you can easily become enlightened, where you are very sensitive. Whereas those who are heedless, the very gross anger, violent, hatred, misery, also they cannot feel. They don't know that there is suffering, where they still blame everything except themselves. You say, why is the world unfair, so unfair? Why is God so unfair? Why are people so selfish? Why must they do things to me? Everything is why. Never able to see that the reality is, why only happened to you? You never ask. Because you have this delusion, sakadity. You cannot understand truth, the reality. So you continuously blame others, pointing fingers at others. When you point one finger out, three fingers point back to you. So that analogy is very good. You point out one, three point back to you. So that three are the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So that pointing out is ignorant. Ignorant condition the three evil roots within you. So if you are a real cultivator, a practitioner of the Dhamma, you will silence your mind and investigate into Dhamma to understand what is going on, to realize the truth. And to investigate is very simple. I assume I don't know anything. I start with a clean slate. I may read the teaching, the Dhamma. I might have heard them from suttas or certain Dhamma talk. But then I don't have to believe them. I should investigate into them. Then I develop the understanding to investigate. Based, I must put it to test, like the Buddha said. I have the senses. I can arise the respective sense door consciousness. I can see things, I can hear things, I can smell, taste, tactile feel, and think. At the moment of sense experience, that is the vital understanding. I have to investigate what happened. When I see something, when I experience that sense consciousness, that seeing consciousness, or that hearing consciousness, what happened to my mind? You have to be mindful to understand that, to investigate that. If you are not mindful, you are not sensitive and you cannot see, you cannot understand. So mindfulness is very, very important, the stability of it. So when you have that stability, you become ever mindful, then you can understand. Without any thought, the awareness, the silent mind just understand that it saw, it witnessed the whole happening. Originally, there was no anger. There was no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no negativity of mind state. At the moment of sense experience, like the Buddha said, in the seeing, is only the seeing consciousness. Then what happened after that? When did the mind still react and become afflicted with the evil root? When did the content of consciousness went in? Silence your mind and see, and you will understand the aggregates of form and mind, why aggregate. Because at the moment of sense experience, it's just the pure consciousness, like the light bulb light up. In the seeing, just that seeing conscious of seeing, the pure seeing, before the concept, the word, the perception and the labeling come out, before your views, opinion and conditioning from your brain comes in and interfere with what you see. Silence your mind to realize this. Then you realize this memory is full of rubbish, like what I came to realize. Then how can you act according to that? Then check the Buddha's teaching. What did the Buddha teach? The Buddha said you must learn to see things as they are. Not what your brain tell you, your memory tell you, your conditioning tell you. See things as they are, the reality. Then the whole cultivation becomes very different. When I see things as they are, means without the memory, the conditioning, the views, or opinion, or knowledge to come in and interfere, then I see that consciousness as it is before the egoic mind comes in. That's why the Buddha said, in the seeing, there's only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. Then I realize what J. Krishnamurti say is correct. There is no observer and the observer. The observer and the observer is one because it is in sati. The awareness that is aware of the thing is one entity. So there is no object and subject. Then when you realize that this become subjective, this become objective seeing. There is no subject involved in the seeing. So objective seeing and subjective seeing is different. Subjective seeing is there's a subject, there's an I, there's a me, there's an egoic mind, a personality that see. Whereas objective seeing is the consciousness that arises, then you witness that. Then when you see your brain, your views, opinion, and conditioning keep on coming in and interfere and stir your mind and make you have that like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience that stir your mind and cause you to react, to condition you into fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, and even anger, hatred, and all those things, or envy and jealousy, then you realize these are delusion, wrong view, that condition the evil roots. This is the wrong way of acting. So the Buddha say, when they arise, you have to apply the four right effort to abandon them, to prevent them from arising. Then right effort to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in you. That's how you straighten your view. That's how you use the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought and all those things. Then you develop the wisdom through the third way and the fourth way. The third way is to remain aware. If you remain aware, you don't feed it with any more thought energy or fuel to burn the delusion. Then what happens? The anger ceases. The agitated state of emotion, fear, insecurity, everything ceases. Because when you just allow it to be, like the pool of water, if there is no stirring by the blockade, it becomes clear. Understand? The true mind will return. Means that stirring of the mind, the anger that arises, the envy, jealousy, fear, worry, anxiety, or insecurity that arise, these are not intrinsic to your mind. They are dependent originating, conditioned arising mind state, no reality. That's why anger is not you, fear is not you, anxiety, insecurity, envy, jealousy, they are not you. Then meditation is to understand, if they are not me, why do they arise in me? And how do they arise in me? Because of sakkayatiti, self-delusion, wrong view, you stir the mind. So what must you do? Straighten your view, not to react anymore. Then follow the Buddha's advice. The third way, just remain aware, silent. Then find out what happened. Whatever anger or negativity or mind state that has arisen, if you just remain silent and aware, this is the wisdom energy that will burn through the defilement. It will root it out. Then you realize the mind returned to its original state before it's stirring, before the wrong view come in. Then you realize this is the Dhamma. This is how you free. Then the fourth way is to trace the origination factor. How did you become angry? How did you stir your mind? How did you become reactive? It's through your seeing consciousness or hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, or thought. One of the senses. And the most powerful one is seeing, hearing, and thinking. So when you trace the origination factor, means you know, before I saw that person or that thing, my mind doesn't react, doesn't stir. But the moment I saw, it stirred. That's why the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, you will come to understand how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be. So this anger, fear, worry, anxiety, or envy and jealousy, they are all evil roots, mental hindrance. Your like and dislike, sensual desire and ill will. Then your restlessness of mind, your doubt. Of course, the lethargic mind. So this state, you will come to understand they arise because you lack the five spiritual faculty. Then you understand, why are you not peaceful? Well, you lack the spiritual faculty, you lack mindfulness, leading to samadhi and wisdom. Then this mental hindrance stir the mind, make you heedless, hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. So you come to know how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. When they arise, they hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. You cannot meditate. And this is not the sublime state of peace and tranquility. That's why you have to investigate, find out, understand, then ask yourself, how can I retrospectively reverse this through an understanding? To reverse it means what? I must untie what happened. How to untie? You trace the origination factor that is due to your wrong view that you stir, where you think you exist. You have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That is the one that conditions you to stir your mind. You want to own thing, have thing, possess thing. If things don't go your way, you become violent, emotional. Then when you don't understand, have doubt, you develop fear, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. Your mind becomes restless. So all this lead to mental hindrance. So after understanding this, you straighten your view. Like the Buddha said, all these are dependent originating, including the five aggregate of form and mind. He no you, he no me. Then, who get angry? Who become fearful? There is none. So once you have straightened your view and have the ability to see things as they are and accept the reality of the moment, then you become at peace. Then you realize everything is just the way it is. Conditioned like that, things will be like that. Then you realize that is the equanimous state that the Buddha talked about. That is the inner peace. Because when you are able to accept things as they are, you become peaceful. You do not create the duality that agitate your mind, cause your suffering and misery. And this is really the sublime state of peace. That's how you free your mind and liberate. Then through that, like the Buddha just now recite through the teaching, he said, the noble Aryan disciple of the Buddha, they cultivate this way. They don't go and avoid seeing, avoid hearing, shut off the senses. No, that one is samatha. That one is some other teaching. Like the saying goes, see no evil, hear no evil, talk no evil, then you are not an evil person. Ayo. Don't see, don't hear, don't talk, also evil inside. We are chattering, deluded mind. So it's not about whether you see or you hear or you talk. It's about cultivation, whether you have wisdom or not, understanding within or not. So this part, I believe, is very important and very useful. So go back, listen to it, reflect on it, then put it into cultivation. And you will see the result beautifully arising. And then this one need understanding. You have to reflect, contemplate until very clear that every time you encounter similar sense experience, make sure you are able to do it. Put it to test. If you still cannot do it, means you fail. That's why every time you can be sensitive, mindful, if the emotion arises, whether it's fear, anger, or envy, jealousy, or whatever, even the subtle one, relax, maintain awareness, then find out what happened, like Song did. Then he realized it ceased. Then after it ceased, you have to trace its origination factor. Then retrospectively reverse it. That one need contemplation, reflection, understanding. Then after that, to reverse it is to straighten your view. Then always remember, thing is just the way it is. The reality is suchness, ta-ta-ta. What is the only reality. We cannot fight reality. We cannot go against nature's law and nature's condition. But we can introduce new causes and conditions for things to arise, for things to manifest. So this is all Dhamma understanding. Then you will become beautiful. Then you will not resist. You will just echo and flow with understanding. Like what the Buddha said. You know what is the sublime state, what is the real peace. Not the stirring of mind and reaction to the wrong view, the sakayadity. That's how you tranquilize and root out all the wrong view. And with the mindfulness, the awareness, the silent mind, it burns all defilement. But this is wisdom energy that see clearly, awaken, insight into phenomena. Then it realized that the agitated state is suffering, misery, and the cause of it is craving, attachment, born of self-delusion. So the Four Noble Truths, one by one, start to fall into place. Then you realize suffering need not be. When I have this understanding, I can be at peace. That's why the Third Noble Truth, cessation of dukkha, the realization of nirvana in the here and the now is possible. Then the path that lead to that cessation is obviously the Noble Eightfold Path. You don't have right view, right speech, right action, and right thought, and the right living and the four right effort with right samadhi, right sati and samadhi. There is no way you can have this type of cultivation and understanding. That's why you act with Noble Eightfold Path. You don't act according to memory. So act with Noble Eightfold Path means what? You start with right view. Thing is just the way it is. Stop. Finish. Then your mind doesn't stir, doesn't react. Condition like that, things be like that. People are just the way they are. Angry people do angry things. Emotional people do emotional things. Deluded people do deluded things. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will be like that. Reflect, contemplate until very clear. Then finally, at that part which my teacher taught me, I like that one. Finally, no reality, only mighty nature rolling by. You are just one of the actor and actress in between. No reality, all this is non-self. He know you, he know me. Following nature's condition, law of karma, law of mind, law of truth. Mighty nature ruling by all nature's law. He know you, he know me, no reality. No one born, no one sick, no one old, no one die. Then why do you grasp over emptiness in between? You come empty, you go empty. In between, why do you cling, grasp, and become afflicted, miserable over emptiness? Like the Mandarin say, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Na mo si zu, he bi ku ku, in between, wei kong liu lei. Our human life is full of suffering and grief in between when we don't understand the Dhamma, when we don't understand life. You have gone through life, you can see. There are many moments when you are young, when you don't understand, you go through suffering too. But when you have the Dhamma, you realize you hardly suffer or you no longer suffer. That is the big difference. And everything turns. Life becomes beautiful, meaningful, wonderful. Character-wise, understanding-wise, personality-wise, you change for the better, you transform. And you became a blessing for all. And you are so beautiful. You can understand life so clearly, live life to the fullest, experience life to the fullest. And you can realize all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Then every moment is full of joy, happiness, peacefulness. Then there's a lot of love, a lot of understanding. Then compassion arises. You have the quality of virtue that continuously arises. You have a lot of humility, a respect for others, appreciative of life. You cherish everything that arises in life. Then you have the clear understanding of how nature law work and function. Then all the spiritual law that governs life and existence, you have clear understanding. That's why you know how to come and you know how to die. You know how to return. So all this understanding is very beautiful. Okay?
PG, yes. PG, come. Yes.
Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Yeah.
Roger, your talk after the meditation to me was very good today.
Yeah. It is very, very clear and profound. Yeah.
Yeah, somehow it really hits me.
Yeah, yeah.
Despite having heard this like
many so times. But this time very clear.
Somehow it's very clear to me.
Yeah, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, sadhu.
It, like you say, that the greatest gift that we can give you is to progress in our
cultivation. In the cultivation, yes.
In this case, I will vow to strive with
sadhu, illness. Sadhu, sadhu. Very, very good, sadhu. My nature. Rejoice,
in
his sadhu.
Sadhu. Thank you so much.
Yeah, rejoice. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You will do well, PG. Based on that affirmation, your nature will open up and grow. And you will come to fruition. Sadhu. Beautiful. Rejoice. Anybody else?
Amitofo.
Pocheng, Amitofo. Yeah, sadhu. Yeah.
Yes, Pocheng.
Yeah, Pocheng, yes. Sadhu.
Very nice to hear from others about today's talk. Yes, I agree totally. It's a very beautiful talk.
Yeah.
And Fire Sermon is one of my favorites.
Sadhu,
I use it a lot of time in the past few years.
Yeah,
it's
sadhu.
Really, really good. You must use it and understand it thoroughly.
Yes.
It's helped me a lot, seriously.
Definitely. Because it gives you the agency. It like wake you up. Everything is burning. What is it burning? Alert. Attentive, and diligent. You can never be lethargic or lazy anymore. The urgency is there. Everything is burning. Is it burning? The three evil roots, born of self-delusion, all things. Then the eye is burning. Every sense organ is burning. So when you see things, hear things, smell things, taste things, tactile feel things, you recall this teaching one. That's why it is burning. Then contact is burning. Means mindfulness, every stage of it is burning. Eye consciousness that arises is burning. That feeling that arises after contact is burning. And with what is it burning? The evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So all these are very powerful understanding. Then after that, you move on to the 18th sense line that I have shared with you, which is basically also the Buddha's teaching. How, when you encounter sense experience, with mindfulness you can see how you stir your mind, how you react to sense experience, how the lack of peace, how the evil root arise, the mental hindrance arise. See this obvious observe it clearly until you understand. Then retrospectively reverse it to an understanding, straighten your view. Then you transform, you awaken straight away. And your mind state become different. What you need is that wisdom, yoniso manasikara, the wisdom at the moment of sense experience, and you will transform. And the two teaching is so beautiful. And combined with Anatta Lakkhana Sutta and the first sermon, everything become very clear. Sadhu, yeah, very good.
Sadhu. Must use this one, today's talk especially, very, very
beautiful,
and must listen again.
Correct.
Become very clear.
Yes.
You can call upon the use of this
Dharma. Apply it in daily life, yes. Very beautiful.
Yes. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Sadhu. Thank you for your good sharing too. You create condition for more explanation. Let us rejoice. Sadhu. Oh, very good. The last 5 minutes, a lot of good sharing. Anybody else?
Can you say something?
Yeah, can.
Emphasize a lot of puja, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, this puja, I had this experience during preparation of puja, right? The Dharma unfold, you know?
Yeah, by itself, yes.
With the mindfulness and awareness, right? Yeah. The Dharma just unfold.
Yeah.
So the teaching all come out, you know?
Yes.
Yes. So it's very amazing. So
yeah.
Imagine if you do puja and then this calm, wow.
Yeah, because the spiritual faculty all arise. Then with the spiritual faculty, you can understand spiritual teaching. Then you get to perform the 10 meritorious action. Your mind state is ready to receive truth. Then you recite the taking of refuge, salutation, then the renewal of precepts. Then also the salutation to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. You understand what the triple gem is. A lot of beautiful teaching and Dhamma. Then you won't go wrong. You won't debate. And puja is so rich, so important, so amazingly wholesome and good. That's why this morning, Sister Queenie came and bring something for offering to the altar for today's session. Simple thing, but she first time got to come in to my altar after the MCO, since the last 5 months. She was in tears, then she said, I want to do the puja here. Then she did the whole puja. She was in tears. That was very wholesome. She said, Ibaratio, I really determined at her age. She is also 70 plus, I think, quite elderly already. And she really determined, Very good to see her having this faith and this type of strong determination. She chant her own way, do the puja her own way. Every morning she do, every day she do. Now I realize more and more Kayamita starts to do the daily routine, which is very beautiful and very wholesome, and it's a good sign, and all this will lead to progress. Sadhu. Very good.
Sadhu.
Okay.
The puja really give you the opportunity and conditions to have the Dharma and all just unfold by yourself.
Yeah.
So make full use of it.
Yeah. Well, it strengthens your faith and it drives you to cultivate. Then your spiritual faculty, once developed, you can understand many spiritual teaching. Then through the puja, you almost perform all the 10 meritorious action, which is very beautiful and very virtuous and meritorious. Okay.
Thank you
so much for saying. Once again, let us rejoice, then we end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.